The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Redeemed, rehabilitated, and real entertaining. This is the Carl Jackson Podcast.
All right, welcome to this edition of the Carl Jackson Show Podcast. We're going to be talking about scam Bankman fraud. You see what I did there, RC? scam Bankman fraud or Sam Bankman freed. More fallout from FTX and the crypto collapse, if you will. Is it still safe to invest in any crypto? Jeffrey Epstein Associates tied up in this. A lot of juicy stuff to get to with my friend RC from Sherlock Market Research, S-H-E-R-L-O-C. But first, I want to please encourage you to please follow me on social media, The Carl Jackson Show or Carl Jackson Show. But if you search The Carl Jackson Show, I'll pop up wherever you are on social media. Also, subscribe to the podcast wherever you do find your podcast. We're on Apple, Google, Spotify, you name it, YouTube, and Rumble. Please subscribe to our channels there. Click the bell, like us, share us. It really does help us move up on the charts so that more people can hear our voices, if you will, of freedom, you know, because this is your daily dose of objective truth in a world of confusion and lies. And we are fighting for Judeo-Christian values. We are fighting to restore the Constitution. We are fighting to restore the middle class and manufacturing inside of the United States of America. Just some of the things that we're about. And speaking of manufacturing inside of the United States of America, just real quick, I want to encourage you. It's the Christmas season. Christmas is closing in on us fast. But there are some great deals out there, especially at MyPillow.com. Our friend Mike Lindell, the founder and CEO of MyPillow, is offering some great deals. All you have to do is go to MyPillow.com, click on that radio listener square, use my name, Carl, with the C, and there are a plethora of deals available to you. Deals up to 66% off, if you can believe it, or you can give them a call at 1-800-858-0263. All right. Having said that, let's dive right into this. I don't want this story to go away because there's lots of dirty hands when it comes to this crypto. When it comes to this crypto scandal with FTX, it's absolutely unbelievable. There's been a lot more fallout since we spoke to RC last and Juliana. And that was just a week or two ago. And so much stuff has broke even this week. And it's like the media, RC, are trying their best to sweep this under the rug because I think there are a lot of dirty hands involved. So if we could, I do want to just, again, as a refresher, not for me, RC, because I know this stuff in and out, but for some of our listeners, blockchain, cryptocurrency, explain it for us real quickly, if you will. And then I want to get on to BlockFi, what's happening there, what's happening with Binance, what's happening with Bitfront, and a Jeffrey Epstein connection and Tether.
Yeah, boy, a lot of ground to cover, Carl. So let's do the basics for everybody again. You hear the terms blockchain and cryptocurrency. So let's simplify. Blockchain is basically like a digital version of your checkbook ledger, right? So every time, I think we're both old enough to remember checkbooks, but every time you would do a checkbook entry, that was a ledger. It told you what you spent it on, how much you spent, and how much was left, right? So blockchain, in essence, is a public-facing version of that. As far as cryptocurrency, that is the method of exchange for you to buy and sell. And there are a number of them, right? Most people understand and know Bitcoin. It is the oldest out there. It's truly decentralized, which we'll come back to a bit later in the show, because that's an important distinction and will help people understand a lot of what's happening now. Then you have others like Ethereum or Ripple or some of the other names you're familiar with. So many times when you want to buy or sell or exchange cryptocurrency, people will take different types. And then you're able to pay for or be paid in that cryptocurrency. So one is the method of exchange. The other is the track record of the exchanges that were made. With that premise, I know as we're going to get into this in a minute, it's funny to me because it sounds like many of the fundamental principles of how cryptocurrency and blockchain are supposed to work simply weren't working.
Yeah, it's. I mean, honestly, this fallout has been absolutely amazing. I hear as many as 130 companies overall have been affected by this, but I want to talk about some of the big players in this. And let's start with Bitfront. So there was an article that appeared in Reuters RC, and I know that you'll know about this. We spoke about this a little bit briefly before we started recording here, but from the article from Reuters, the title is Crypto Exchange Bitfront Shuts Down. Basically, here's the summary. Bitfront, a U.S. crypto exchange backed by Japanese social media firm Line Corp, said it has suspended new signups and credit card payments and will cease operations in a few months despite efforts to overcome challenges in the rapidly evolving industry. But something else that Bitfront is doing is they are not allowing withdrawals from November 28th all the way up through March 31st of 2023, which tells me that they are on extremely shaky ground.
Correct, Carl. So when you hear something like that, you know that the exchange is illiquid, right? So let me give folks a correlation here, because while this is important and Bitfront being operated by Line, which is a reputable Japanese company. We consulted Rakuten for a number of years, so we're very familiar with Line. I want you to think about the last line that you said, Carl, then I'll get into the comparison with a bank. Rapidly changing market, right? So let's translate that into normal person speak. Bitfront was exposed and was doing stuff they weren't supposed to do, just like the rest of the crypto exchanges, and they got caught. So as a result, to stop a quote unquote run on the bank for people to try to get their money, the nouveau thing to do is to just suspend withdrawals for a set period of time. So if you were a customer of Bitfront or BlockFi or FTX, or you're a customer of Coinbase, you should read the terms and conditions very closely, because it sounds really bad, right? You can't get your crypto out. Of this thing. But if you read the terms and conditions, they tell you that when you put your crypto into their exchange, you don't actually own it anymore. And in the event of a bankruptcy, So Coinbase got caught with this a couple of months ago when they did a filing. They're a publicly traded company, so they obviously have to do filings for investors. They have to report. So in the terms and conditions, it says that your deposits, quote unquote, once you make them, aren't technically yours. And in the event of a bankruptcy or other liquidation, your deposits could be used to satisfy those judgments. So in an effort to make sure there's something left to pay off creditors, which don't include you because you're probably not one of their larger ones. And when we talk about BlockFi, you'll see what that means. They want to make sure that they have enough assets to at least try and make an effort. So Carl, before we move on, I want to give people a correlation here, right? Okay. So this is bad, right? And these crypto exchanges, I know they create instability and doubt in people's minds, but I want you to keep a correlation in mind, because here at Sherlock, we believe that this is actually going to happen to some degree in the United States. When you deposit your money in a bank, pick your local bank, it's fine, whatever. You'll notice that it is insured by the FDIC, the Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation, up to $250,000. So you feel pretty good when you put your money in the bank that it's yours.
Right.
I challenge you to deposit $5,000 and then 2 days later go to the bank and get that $5,000 out in cash. You'll get asked a bunch of questions. They'll tell you that you have to make an appointment. They'll go get a manager. They'll tell you you have to come back because they don't have your money on hand. Right. And so if there was a stressor event, let's say that digital payment systems, credit card systems went down throughout the United States right now.
Right.
The first thing that would happen is there'd be a run on the banks because everybody would want to get cash, something they could tangibly spend or exchange, right? Well, guess what? The banks don't have any money in them. So what they would do in an effort to avoid a run on the bank is call for a bank holiday, which would suspend withdrawals, which is exactly what you're seeing with Bitfront and the others. So while this is happening in crypto, please make no mistake that the world financial system as a whole, and we mentioned this the last time we were on with you, Carl, is hanging on a string. And if the big banks around the world had to report their short positions. Those are positions that they take and make investments where they're betting on something to go down. If they right. actually had to report that information, all the banks around the world would be instantly insolvent.
You know, and I'm getting ready to go through some of the numbers associated with BlockFi, but there's no doubt you're absolutely right, and I think that is a very important correlation to make. You know, for those of you that are tuning in to the podcast, I'm just not smart enough when it comes to this stuff in particular. That's why we have R.C. Williams basically on standby now when it comes to all things crypto, because he worked in Silicon Valley for years. He's founded his own firm, Sherlock Market Research. And so he knows this stuff inside and out, and he researches it incessantly. So people like me don't have to. And when we're scratching our head, we can just say, let's call RC. But I want to learn more about this. And I hope those of you that are listening want to learn more about this as well, because we want to know what's safe. We also want to know when things are a scam. RC, I got to tell you, something you said was very illuminating to me when you talked about the terms and conditions when these people, buy into crypto or they leave their money or put their money into these exchanges. They're not guaranteed to get their money back. If that's in the fine print, so to speak, hearing you say that right away, my first thought was, okay, Sam Bankman-Fried, in my opinion, needs to go to jail because he's a complete and utter fraud. But is he protected by what you just said?
So, Carl, you'll find that as the bankruptcy shakes out, some of that is true. But let's also think about how many people and how many groups were involved in the FTX process. Yep. Now, all of this stuff is coming out, and Noel Fersh at National File did an incredible job. We run another show with him a couple of weeks ago on a Wednesday, and that following Friday, he was the one that broke the story about where the FTX money was going, both Democrat and Republican, and how it was being used, right? So think about this, and it may sound a little crazy to people, but think about it logically for a second. If you are doing the bidding of people who have a vested interest in you doing their bidding, if something goes sideways or they get caught, are they really incentivized to go all the way? Because a guy like Sam Bankman-Fried, should be going to jail for a really long time, right? That's going to be an episode of American Greed. We always joke around the office is that when it makes it to American Greed, you know you got something, right?
You know what? I got to be honest with you. I have never watched American Greed. I didn't even know what what it was about. I try not to watch. I watch news incessantly. I'm horrible. I'm not going to lie. Mm-hmm. I also watch, car shows. I watch Animal Planet a little bit or whatever. But American Greed, every time I pass it by on the TV Guide channel, I'm like, what is that about? And I'm like, it's probably some liberals just, trying to undermine capitalism. And so it's funny that you say that. So now I'm going to check it out because it always intrigues me when I see the title. Never clicked on it. Never even bothered to read the description underneath because I assumed I knew what it was. So that's just funny. That's side note anyway. All right. But this is something I found fascinating, too. Before we get off of Bitfront, using credit cards to buy crypto sounds really dangerous to me. I just want to get your take on that. And also, let me ask you before we move off of that. So two, using credit cards to buy crypto. Actually, that's one. Sounds dangerous. Mm-hmm. Secondly, has Sam Bankman fraud, in your opinion, caused irreparable harm to the crypto market?
So let's take the second question first, Carl. Okay. Has he caused irreversible harm to the cryptocurrency industry? I think he's done damage that's going to take a really long time to clean up. So as we talked before we started the show today, we were talking offline, is that this is going to be like a phoenix rising from the ashes moment. Our hope, and in the research that we see, is that as this stuff clears out and people better understand the basics and why these centralized exchanges are dangerous, that what comes out of it is what cryptocurrency was always meant to be all along, which is truly decentralized and peer-to-peer. Simply put, if Carl and I both see value, he has something to sell and it's something that I want to buy, and we make the choice to exchange, we can do so without a bank or without Uncle Sugar involved in the process. Well, we know the government hates competition. So what's a good way to eliminate that? Set it up to where it either looks incredibly unstable and you can control it, or control it from the beginning, which is a central bank digital currency. I'm sure we'll get to that. Right. So that's part one. I think there's a phoenix that rises from the ashes type of moment that's going to happen. It's going to take a minute to shake out, but I don't think that cryptocurrency is destroyed because of scam, Bankman fraud. I love your new name for him. That's awesome.
So this is good Lord. You mentioned this in a podcast before. I just think this is wise. But if cryptocurrency is supposed to be decentralized money, then anyone that you would see schmoozing with politicians should send up a red flag, for God's sakes. I'll be honest with you. I mean, I don't know this stuff inside and out, but if I'm seeing, I didn't even know who SBF was until these headlines started breaking, and then we had you on, and I'm like, oh crap, you know, I didn't even get it. But shouldn't you be concerned if you see one of these guys schmoozing and donating to politicians? Shouldn't that send out a red flag?
Great question, Carl. It absolutely should. You should be wary of this, right? It's kind of like what I said, and I'm sure you thought this too, about Barack Obama coming on the scene. You know, one day he's a community organizer on the street corner. Next thing you know, he's the president of the United States.
Right.
When someone comes fast and loose like that, and then all of a sudden they have these instant levels of access, that should give you pause, right? But let's take it a step further, because there are correlations, and this is going to sound strange to people, but I want you to really think about it, is that any time that you see someone like a Sam Bankman-Fried who ended up with an outsized level of control over not only who ended up getting elected or not elected,
right,
but also over politicians and helping to write legislation, you are in a very similar parallel. And everybody forgive me for a second, because when I say it, it's going to shock you. You're in a very similar parallel to the one that you had with J.P. Morgan during the industrial age.
Think about it
for a second, right? Because J.P. Morgan's dad didn't particularly care for the kid, right? And J.P. Morgan had his own things that he wanted to do. When his dad died, he finally got control of the whole thing. What a lot of people don't know is that J.P. Morgan bailed out the United States government on a number of occasions, which gave him an outsized level of control over legislation and who won and lost elections. William McKinley was a candidate that was bought and paid for by J.P. Morgan, John Rockefeller, and Andrew Carnegie. And listen, I'm a huge fan of history, right? I love the history of the United States because I love the United States. But it comes with everything. You don't just get the good parts.
Right.
So that's something for people to think about. And I don't want to lose your first question, Carl, because you asked about the dangers of buying cryptocurrency with credit cards. And so it's an excellent question. So think about it like this. You can go to the casino, right? And if you want to get some cash off your credit card to gamble, you can do it. Is it dangerous? Absolutely. But in the back of your mind and in your subconscious, you're like, well, look, worst comes to worst, I'm not technically holding the bag. The credit card company is.
Fair enough.
And that's where people are thinking now.
Yeah. No, it makes total sense. As soon as you started, I don't know, you said something, I'm like, okay, it started clicking for me. It makes total sense here. Okay.
Yeah.
BlockFi, crypto firm BlockFi files for bankruptcy as FTX fallout spreads. Let me just read this part. The Jersey City, New Jersey based company had already halted withdrawals of customer deposits, which you have already explained, and admitted that it had, quote, significant exposure, close quote, to the now bankrupt crypto exchange FTX and its sister trading house, Alameda Research. That seems to be what I'm finding here, RC, as I read more, that so many of these companies were basically, they were kind of uplifted, if you will, by FTX, by Alameda Research. But there just wasn't much to them. BlockFi, listen to this. In the filing, the company listed an outstanding $275 million loan to FTX US, the American arm of SBF's now bankrupt empire. This is absolutely crazy to me. They have 100,000, and I'm throwing a lot at you, RC, but I know you can handle
it. You're good. Go ahead.
They have 100,000 creditors with liabilities and assets ranging from $1 billion to $10 billion. Talk about your balance sheet not freaking adding up when it comes to BlockFi.
So, Carl, check this out. So I'm going to put on my glasses here because I went to the Sherlock Big Board, which is our market research technology platform, Parable, and I got some notes before we got started today for you.
Okay.
So but before we jump into them, I want people to understand that what happened here, and as we go through BlockFi's notes, happens on a banking level. So the interest rate that you hear about, when the interest rate ticks up or ticks down, that is the interest rate that banks charge each other when they lend each other money overnight. So what happens is bank A says, look, I need $10 billion to cover this. Bank B says, great, I'll loan it to you at 3%. And then bank A gets the money, does what they need to do, pays it back just after midnight. That's what that exchange is, right?
Okay.
So for cryptocurrency, these exchanges do it, but they do it like a rabid crackhead. Man, look, I need a buck. Carl, I need a buck, man. Look, give me a buck.
Okay,
I'll give you a buck 10, right?
So makes sense, right?
Here are the notes that I got for you from the Sherlock Big Board on the BlockFi bankruptcy. In the bankruptcy filings, BlockFi's lawyer said this, that BlockFi is the antithesis of FTX. Everybody understand the definition of antithesis? The polar opposite of.
Right. Okay.
And it said that BlockFi, basically what they're saying is BlockFi got hustled too. They said that BlockFi was holding $355 million in digital assets with FTX. Follow-on question is why? But here's the thing that really killed BlockFi. And then I'll come back to some other weird connection here on their creditors, especially their top ones. What BlockFi said is that Alameda Research defaulted on a $670 million collateralized loan obligation to BlockFi, which was basically a tipping point for them. So all of these people who have no money are lending money to each other. But Carl, here's the capper. The top three creditors that are owed, right?
Yeah.
In one of them includes the SEC. BlockFi had a settlement payment agreement with the SEC for $30 million. They owe more than $1 billion to their three largest creditors, including an FTX U.S. subsidiary. So you loan me money, I owe you money, but you were going to loan me more money. You didn't give it to me, so now I can't pay you back. So I'm just going to file for bankruptcy.
Sure.
Right? Think about that for a second. Think about what just happened here.
Wow.
I know.
Yeah. You know, and honestly, okay – having heard that, it makes sense. BlockFi, I could buy into they were taken off guard, if you will, because they loaned FTX $275 million, this part that I'm reading. So they're probably like, oh, crap. We've got to – all of us need to remain stable here. I can totally buy that. It says here, BlockFi's bankruptcy filing shows that the company's largest disclosed client has a balance of $28 million. Ooh, I hope that was play money for. I hope that was play money for somebody. Obviously, I want to get your take on this, RC. Bermuda, like the Bahamas, has embraced crypto as the future of finance. Both established frameworks to deal specifically with crypto assets and digital currencies. It's much easier to do this stuff or to base this stuff out of Bermuda and Bahamas, correct me if I'm wrong, because their laws are a little more lenient when it comes to this type of stuff, which is why I think in part why SBF isn't in jail, besides the fact that he's buttered everyone's bread from Democrats to Republicans.
True that. So, Carl, I mean, we do in our research, we actually do a lot for clients who want to set up international structures. The top reason, legitimately speaking, that people set up international business structures, this will make sense in a second, is because the U.S. tax structure is prohibitive to the growth of a business. So in essence, there isn't anything wrong with setting up an entity in Bermuda or the Bahamas. There are favorable tax implications. If you don't plan to repatriate money to the U.S. and you're doing it internationally, why would you give Uncle Sam a ton of money if you make a ton of money? It makes no sense to do that, right?
Right.
And you haven't broken any law. More closely to what you just asked about, FTX's setup in the Bahamas was favorable for tax conditions, but it was also favorable for business protection laws in the event of prosecution or of bankruptcy. Thus, you had the setup. There's somebody taking advantage of the system, knowing, based on what we see now, that they were going to be doing lots of naughty things.
Yeah.
So let me share this about Bermuda, because you threw in Bermuda and the Bahamas, and they're actually distinctly different.
Okay.
So the Bahamas offer some level of protection, much like the Cayman Islands does or St. Kitts and Nevis. These are popular destinations. But there's something wholly unique about Bermuda. And the reason that you're hearing it in the news, when I say this to you, you'll be like, oh, I get it. So all of the reinsurance companies around the world, a reinsurance company is a company that insures your insurer, right, for additional risk. All of the reinsurance companies in the world are based in Bermuda.
Really?
Because the way that Bermuda's laws are written, it is super favorable. I'm going to let people that are watching here in on a little secret in the event that they didn't know it. Hedge funds use reinsurance companies for legalized versions of money laundering so that they can lever up and make huge amounts of money and risk all of yours. The way that they're able to do that cleanly, and I won't go over the whole process here now.
Yeah.
They use reinsurance companies based in Bermuda in order to get their money out and get it back in without having to pay tax on it. So it shouldn't surprise you that you hear Bermuda in this and that hedge funds in some way plan to be involved in whatever the rebirth of a centralized crypto exchange would be in the future. Because why not? They need another way to move money around. Right.
Wow.
But make no mistake that the structure's already in place and being used. And once again, I think with Bermuda in particular, should that pan out, they're going to use cryptocurrency as a scapegoat and continue their activity, just use it as another method. So we always tell people when they work with us or they ask us questions on the research side, we say, look, we're going to give you the whole gamut and we'll connect the dots for you, because you have to understand who your enemy is and how they operate if you're going to effectively operate against them or avoid them. We can't sugarcoat it. And that's just a fact.
Hmm. All right. Let me get your take on this. One thing that I found pretty amazing was that BlockFi here, or actually FTX, just as recently as July, offered to buy BlockFi. I mean, it's astounding to me, but just as you said, it makes sense now when these people just move. I mean, they just move cash money like crazy in these firms. So it's just astounding how quickly this has gone down. Let me just read this part and then get your take here. In a matter of days, FTX went from $32 billion valuation to bankruptcy as liquidity dried up. Customers demanded withdrawals and rival exchange Binance ripped up its non-binding agreement to buy the company. Gross negligence has since been exposed. Ray added, this is the new CEO of FTX, who says in his 40 years of legal and restructuring experience, he's never seen anything like the collapse and the financial just failure of FTX. So he's taken that over like he took over. I think it was Enron that he took over. OK,
yep.
So he added that the substantial portion, quote unquote, of assets held with FTX may be, quote, missing or stolen. People are screwed.
Carl, you summing it up with that last line, people are screwed, that's a good one, right? But let's think about what happened here, right? So it's either missing or stolen. If something is exchanged, it has to land somewhere.
Exactly.
So
exactly. Oh,
with a technology like crypto, we should be able to get an idea of the outflow of this stuff. And with the advanced surveillance state that we have in the U.S. and other places around the world, you'd think we'd be able to find an intersection of where this stuff went. Unless, of course, going back to what we discussed a little while ago, the goal is to not really ever find what happened to it.
And okay, which brings me to this last article that I began reading from Revolver News. Revolver News does some great work of this stuff where it's factual, but 2 years ago, you would have thought it was conspiracy theory. They do great work at Revolver News. They really do. So check them out. It's revolver.news. If you go to Revolver News, you go somewhere else, but it's actually revolver.news. All right. So FTX on steroids is their headline. Is Tether the Biden world's crypto BCCI? I don't even know what BCCI stands for. Anyway, let me just read this part and get your take on it. RC, here's a summary. Just days ago, Bloomberg estimated 30-year-old scam Bankman fraud personal wealth at an astonishing $16 billion. And now the disgraced FTX founder is essentially bankrupt. And if there is a shred of justice in the world, soon headed for prison. We've talked about that. The collapse of FTX and its founder is one of the most spectacular implosions in history. There's no shortage of narrative to mine for interesting article fodder. Celebrities like Tom Brady, Giselle, we all know this, lost millions to the scam. There's a Silicon Valley smart money, quote unquote, that was hopelessly entranced by a wonderkind founder. SBF also used his ill-begotten lucre to become one of the largest donors in left-wing politics of the past 4 years. They talk about this effective altruism before they get into Jeffrey Epstein or an associate of Jeffrey Epstein, which I want to get into shortly. But I'll read this last part and just get your take before we go forward and then tell us about who Tether is. There's also the FTX pet philosophy of effective altruism, the cult-like fad ideology of contemporary Silicon Valley that SBF exploited to conduct his fraud and justify taking enormous risks. And who can forget the 28-year-old girl boss CEO of Alameda Research, Caroline Ellison, who bragged that her vast financial empire only requires elementary school math to turn profits, and whose public list of turn-ons includes controlling major world governments. I don't think she, I'll be honest, I don't think she was wrong in saying that it took elementary style or school math in order to turn profits. The problem is this stuff wasn't backed by anything, RC.
Yeah, isn't that fun, right? So it's like, wow, it wasn't really backed by anything tangible. But here, let me stop for a second, Carl, because Tether is an interesting exercise. So Tether, co-founded by child actor, right? So you're starting to hear these connections to Epstein and yep. stuff like that. The goal with Tether and USDT is that thing was supposed to be a stable coin, right? Or backed or measured one-to-one with the US dollar. So it's in essence supposed to be stable, but it was always kind of weird. And it was used as almost a Trojan horse, I think, to lay groundwork for the freedom of a Sam Bankman-Fried to do what he needed to do, right? If you read that piece from Revolver, in essence, that's what they're saying. Tether's a very important layer, and they ask a question that everybody should be asking themselves. Who is Tether really controlled by? Because yeah. in the fallout of FTX, and I believe this was on Bloomberg, that the co-founder of Tether that we're talking about actually did an interview on this. And it was a bit strange. Like, he went the direction of, well, Tether's stable. You know, we did this. We don't know why that happened. But it was just an odd exchange. And I think at certain points, there were questions he simply didn't want to answer. Sure. And with good reason, right? Because he didn't want people to be able to connect the dots that Revolver did. So you're in a place where, as I said earlier, I think the shakeout that's going on with crypto now is really good, because all of this stuff gets out in the open and people can see how these people operate and say, wait a minute, this is in no way what cryptocurrency was intended to do or intended to be. But right. much like things that are designed for freedom, people manipulate them. Right. And Tether is another one where I have to be honest with you, Carl, and we haven't gone deep dive research on it yet. The questions about Tether stability are in question at this point. But we've also said that the stability of Binance is also in question. And you know, you said something a minute ago, and I'll come back to Tether, is that FTX was looking to buy BlockFi. And in essence, it's almost like what you had with the financial crash back in 08 and 09. Companies just wanted to buy up companies to try to cover up what they were doing. Well, what's the fastest way to do it? It's to buy them and then bury that stuff somewhere so that you can't find it. So if FTX couldn't pay BlockFi, they said, well, look, we'll just quote unquote buy you and then you won't have to worry about it anymore. It didn't happen, right? And then in the situation with Binance and FTX, because Binance was going to buy FTX, right, is there were two things that happened. Binance accurately saw that FTX had an issue with their balance sheet, right? That's why over a series of 3 days, they went from we're going to buy it to we're going to give them a loan to, you know what, we're just going to walk away from this thing.
Right.
But there was also an intense competition between Binance's CEO and Sam Bankman-Fried. And Binance's CEO saw an opportunity to take advantage and dominate the exchange space by throwing FTX under the bus, which is why when he came out and all the fallout started, he said, I'm the new crypto savior. When someone says something like that, Carl, take them literally. I'm saying this to everybody who's watching this. When they say something like that, take them literally. He meant what he said, and now he's taking actions in that direction. But again, don't be fooled. There are problems fundamentally with Binance, just like any other centralized exchange today. And Tether, I believe, it set groundwork for people to do bad things, including an Epstein. And then the next question from Revolver is, has this been used to launder money and to provide plausible deniability? That is a question that people should demand an answer to the government of the United States and other governments complicit in odd things. That's the question you should be asking about FTX and why this money was going to all these politicians and all these groups and what they were doing with it.
Man, you know what, RC, you literally got ahead of me. You're so informed on this stuff. It's freaking amazing. No, it's fine. I mean, it's honestly, I'm sitting here thinking I'm going to read this and ask RC about this. And then you're explaining it all. And I'm like, OK, I guess I wasted time reading this freaking article. But but no, I didn't, because I want to know this stuff. But I do want to read from the article because you hit some points. And I just want to reiterate some of the things that you said that's written here in Revolver, Revolver News. It says, in fact, dear reader, FTX may not even be the biggest scam in crypto. Another even more spectacular scam may still be live, ready to collapse at any moment if anyone decides to take a real look at it. The story you're about to hear concerns the third largest cryptocurrency on the planet, which you've probably never heard of. It is a story of how a former Disney child actor, which you mentioned, RC, a Jeffrey Epstein associate who was embroiled in an underage sex scandal, bizarrely emerged as one of the world's strongest cryptocurrency moguls. It is a story that raises serious questions as to whether an entire cryptocurrency is a scam, effectively a private money printer. And to top it all off, there's reason to believe that if this cryptocurrency is the scam that it appears to be, it will nonetheless be allowed to continue because of this particular cryptocurrency's usefulness to intelligence agencies in funneling money to foreign rebel groups and jihadis with plausible deniability. They go on to say, sound crazy, sound interesting, strap in, it's about to get wild, and I want to get your response to that. But first, let me just talk about Tether as a stable coin, and then let get your take on this, RC. So USDT, or Tether, is what is known as stable coin. A stable coin is a cryptocurrency that, instead of fluctuating in value, is intended to hold a consistent price. You've talked about that. Tether is a USD stable coin. Each Tether is supposed to be equal in value to one US dollar. While most cryptocurrencies are wildly speculative and backed by essentially nothing, each Tether is supposed to be backed directly by a US dollar or an extremely liquid, reliable investment like a U.S. Treasury bond. These USD stable coins are used on cryptocurrency exchanges to conduct on the blockchain trades in lieu of using actual U.S. dollars. Without stable coins like Tether, the cryptocurrency ecosystem simply would not exist. There are multiple USD stable coins, but Tether is by far the most popular. This, according to CoinMarketCap.com, Tether has the third highest market cap of any cryptocurrency at $66 billion, trailing only Bitcoin and Ethereum. Here's the problem, RC. Tether boasted a $1 billion market capitalization when Bitcoin hit 20,000 at the end of 2017. This year it's at 70 billion plus, but they've never been audited. No one knows whether or not this is actually true. No one knows how much money they actually have. As a matter of fact, there's no evidence that Tether actually works this way. They say, we repeat, there's no proof that Tether stablecoins are backed by the store of tangible assets that is supposed to justify their value. Tether has never been audited in any way. As a matter of fact, Tether says audit is still months away as crypto market falters. So I read a lot there. Stablecoin, cryptocurrency in being questioned in its totality. I threw a lot at you there, RC. But I want to get your response to it the best you can.
So let's take the basic premise of this, Carl, because the last part that you said about the audit and everything is really the meat of it, right? So if I had $66 and Carl, you'd given me, let's say you give me a dollar. If I couldn't provide you an audit, you'd probably be like, well, look, RC, get it to me when you can, man. I'd like to see it, but it's a buck, right?
Right.
When you hold $66 billion in value, and you can't provide something as simple as regular, independent, third-party, ongoing audits, or actually show people that what you're saying you have backed by something quote-unquote tangible, you can't just show it to people. Well, it's like what Ben and Jerry's used to say about Pillsbury. What's the doughboy afraid of, right? What are you so afraid of? Or let's just be honest. What are you hiding that you don't want people to see? If you can't prove it, best to probably get that out now so people know. Oh, but you can't because you're so intertwined with what Revolver said, U.S. government stuff, all of this. You're so intertwined that we can't have that happen. So the audit is quote unquote delayed because of a fluctuation in the cryptocurrency market. Honest question, Carl. If you're backed by something that's supposed to be stable, why would fluctuations in the cryptocurrency market stop you from providing an audit?
Right, man, such a good point. I mean, listen, this stuff just fascinates me, and a lot of people are going to be hurt by this. But and again, I'm speaking to RC Williams. He's with Sherlock Market Research. RC, before we close out here, where can people go to find you? And then I just want to ask you another one more question here.
Sure, Carl. If they want more information on Sherlock Market Research, they can go to investinanswers.com. That's investinanswers.com. And Carl, I'll tell you quickly, we're going to announce this today, but you actually get the breaking news story. So Our Parable Market Research technology platform is super simple to use, but it's generally been a business-to-business function. We work with companies all over the world. What we're actually going to announce today is that we're going to make the Parable Market Research platform available to everybody. So we've picked 5 market research categories that people can get access to twice a month. If they go to investinanswers.com and they click on the Learn More About Parable button, they'll see what's available and what they can do. What we wanted to do, because we get so many questions about stuff, is we said, how do we simplify it, give people access, and then give them like a one-page blueprint that goes with the data so they understand what's going on. So, Carl, you get the breaking news announcement. We're actually launching that today.
All right.
So they can learn more at investinanswers.com. And then our news publication, Sherlock Exposes, is a great place to get updates every day ripped from the headlines. If people go to sherlockexposes.com, they can get signed up. The subscription is free. They can get signed up and get the information that they need.
All right. That was RC's way of telling me, Carl, you can actually learn and sound smarter about this stuff, you dummy. So I'm just playing. No, that's good news. People need it's good to have a place that you can go to that you trust, that does a lot of this research for you. You can research and basically springboard off of your research and really get into this stuff because, you know, obviously this stuff is exciting. People want to be able to make money. People want to we look at what's happening in Washington, D.C. with all these frauds that are freaking spending our money like crazy. I got to be honest with you. I better watch my back when I say this. But if these people that are going to jail, that TV couple, I forget their names. My point was these scam artists in Washington, D.C. that take our tax money, redistribute our wealth and spin beyond oblivion. I'm sitting here thinking like, I don't want these people handling my money. I really don't. But that's a different subject for another day, because I don't want the FBI to come for me. I'm just not a big fan of federal taxes. Anyway,
I'm with you, brother.
All right. So, last question here. And you've touched on it already. Should people even trust crypto anymore?
Yeah, Carl, it's a great question. And the answer to that is absolutely. And let me explain why I say that and why I'm convicted in that. The original idea of cryptocurrency being purely decentralized and peer-to-peer is true economic freedom. And look, there's nothing wrong with gold and silver and precious metals. Julian and I in Sherlock Market Research were fans of that. We just did our forecast for precious metals in 2023. It's a great place to be, but it is also limited in its capacity. Great to have, great store of wealth, but its liquidity and the movement of it becomes a challenge sometimes. Cryptocurrency allows us to exchange freely without government interaction. So what we believe will happen is that once all of this cryptocurrency madness shakes out and people have a baseline understanding about why some of these centralized exchanges are so dangerous, that the return to a pure decentralized peer-to-peer cryptocurrency is the best thing ever. Here's the thing that people don't realize about Bitcoin. Bitcoin is truly decentralized, right? Peer-to-peer. If you were going to serve a subpoena to Bitcoin, who would you serve it to? There's no central office. Right. There's a reason for that. But people have been able to take the code from Bitcoin and build incredible things. Today, when you go to a gas station or anywhere like that, a convenience store, you see a Bitcoin ATM machine. Well, someone took Bitcoin's code and decided to build an ATM system around it. That's the power of a decentralized cryptocurrency. And that's why the government hates it. Carl, we did the famous Why the Government Hates Crypto in 60 Seconds on your show. And that clip's available for everybody to see. But this is the good news. As this stuff shakes out and we get back to the core fundamentals, I think what comes out of the ashes are people who also have a strong belief in that. And they're going to create things that allow us to actually truly be free when it comes to economics. So we're hopeful. And as this stuff shakes out, you know, we report it. Yeah, folks like you and I and Juliana, we're the scribes that let people know what's happening. But what comes out of it, we think, is good news.
All right. Okay. Very fascinating conversation. And again, I know there's a lot of people out there that are curious about this stuff. I think the mainstream media wants to hide this story. They're trying to, it seems to me, all of a sudden they're trying to memory hole this story. And I think there's because a lot of people have done a lot of dirt. A lot of people knew what was going on. Scam Bankman Fraud was a fraud, but there were certainly people involved, including politicians, that I believe that had their hands in it, that perhaps knew what was going on, but they really didn't care because they were getting a piece of the pie and using his effective altruism, if you will, in order to dupe people into a cult-like, following this virtue signaling. Oh, my God, I can give this guy money and I can feel good about myself. I think he was able to dupe a lot of people, but I have a feeling a lot of people weren't duped. Some of the names of the politicians, I don't think they were duped at all, to be frank. I think they're probably just as guilty, but that's just me. Probably another story for another day. Anyway, listen, R.C. Williams of Sherlock Market Research. You spell Sherlock, S-H-E-R-L-O-C. So you can check him out. They do great work, obviously. Very informative when it comes to this particular topic. And again, for all of you listening, I just want to encourage you to please subscribe to the podcast wherever this podcast is found. I'm trying to do research and touch on articles that are impacting everyday Americans. I know people, including myself, that have invested in crypto, especially when you're in the middle class, you're working hard, you're trying to get ahead, you're trying to live the American dream. This stuff impacts us, man. It really sets us back, you know? And so we need to be informed on this stuff. We need to know that wherever our money goes is safe. It's with people and with companies that we can trust. So I want to try to bring you as much of this information as possible, and also understand who are the fakes and the phonies and who are the corrupt politicians in Washington, D.C., and all that kind of good stuff. So please subscribe to this podcast. Again, wherever podcasts are found, find me on social media, The Carl Jackson Show. Take advantage of the deals at MyPillow.com. All you have to do is click on that radio listener square, use the promo code Carl, I spell it with a C, or give them a call if you prefer, 1-800-858-0263. Christmas is closing in on us, and there is an array of deals that are available, from towels to slippers to Giza sheets, Perkel bed sheets, you name it, it's there. Products that are up to 66% off. So take advantage for Christmas. All right. And then they have a 10-year warranty and a 60-day money-back guarantee. And as a matter of fact, some of the products that are bought by December 25th, the extended warranty will be extended even further, I believe, through March 31st of 2023. So that would be close to 90 days, if you will. So, all right, guys, I appreciate you tuning in to this edition of the Carl Jackson Show podcast. Please, please subscribe. And until next time, do not grow weary doing good. God bless you.
Three-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.